Hey guys, welcome to the Wrestling Nostalgia version of the WWE podcast, and a very unique match tonight that we're going to discuss. Edge versus Mick Foley in a hardcore match at WrestleMania 22. A match that is often forgotten, a match that I think is underestimated when we look back. And while it was 15 years ago, it is certainly a match worth watching, considering that this really put Edge on the map. So we're going to get to the audio from it, my thoughts, and everything else right after this. Love talking sports, gambling on all sports, also fantasy sports, New Jersey Devils, New York Jets, Chicago Cubs, UConn, Yale, Boston Celtics, and more. Let's make some money. Head over to soundcloud.com/rappingsportswithjax. That's soundcloud.com/rappingsportswithjax.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Wednesday, July 1st, 2020. Welcome to July, folks. We are now getting into the thick of summer, so like it or not, summer is truly here now, and soon baseball will be here. For those of you that care about such things, baseball will be returning in just a few weeks, albeit no fans in attendance, so there's always that caveat, right? Just like everything is reopening, and we're in phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four. Oh yeah, you were open, but we can only work at 50% or 25% capacity. You still have to be 6 feet apart, and you got to wear a mask. So it's like you're out of prison, but you're not, right? And it's still a little bit frustrating. I think we all want the masks to go away, the distancing to go away, and everything to just kind of return to normal. And it doesn't, unfortunately, look like that's the case. In fact, it looks like the opposite is happening across the country as a whole. So hopefully things start to turn around, and eventually this thing has to be kicked right in the ass, and somebody's got to put it down for a three count, right? It's like, somebody's going to hit a finish on this virus, and it'll finally put it down. Maybe somebody will do the dreaded devastating roll-up, right? That seems to be the most devastating move in pro wrestling today, is the roll-up, or the schoolboy, or whatever variation of the R-Truth 24/7 championship style of exchanging the belt you want to pick. I mean, that's how people win matches today, right? You can do 30 super kicks. You could do 40 suicide dives during a match. Doesn't matter. What matters most is who hits the roll up first. And I'm being a bit facetious, but I'm also being a little bit serious that the roll up, when you look at the percentage of how many times that wins a matchup, it's scary. It's scary right now. I don't know what it is. They just can't. I guess the logic behind a roll up is that the person who loses, the person who gets pinned, you could say, oh, it's just by surprise, or that person got lucky. It's a way to protect and get a victory without actually having that victory have weight, because it protects the person who lost. So it's like 50-50 booking without actually 50-50 booking. I don't know. The roll-up, and you'll notice it. I mean, it's the thing now. So, all right, I'm off that bandwagon early. Thank you guys for joining me. This is the Wrestling Nostalgia Night, and we're going to get into your Wrestling Nostalgia, which is Edge versus Mick Foley, WrestleMania 22, 2006, in a hardcore match, one that I have not viewed in 15 years up until today, and I'm going to get into that match, which was downright brutal. I mean, it was hard to watch at times, and we're going to get to some of the audio and, of course, my reaction, and we'll go through the match. But first, what I like to do for all of these is, since I'm not reviewing the entire pay-per-view, is just to give you guys a little bit of the lay of the land of what the rest of the card looked like back at this time. And again, this was back on April 2nd, 2006, It took place in Rosemont, Illinois, really Chicago, they like to say, at the Allstate Arena. So 17,000 in attendance. This was pre every WrestleMania being in a stadium, and that came very, very shortly thereafter. So again, let's take a look at what the rest of the card looked like. Ready? Here we go. First up, Viscera won by eliminating Snitsky in the Battle Royal. That match took about 6 minutes. Big Show and Kane defeated Carlito and Chris Masters to win the World Tag Team Championships. That was also about 6 minutes. RVD defeated Bobby Lashley, Finlay, Matt Hardy, Ric Flair, and Shelton Benjamin. And get this, a Money in the Bank ladder match. So if those of you that aren't old enough to remember or haven't been fans long enough to know that the Money in the Bank ladder match was never its own pay-per-view. It was at WrestleMania for several years before it moved to its own separate pay-per-view event. And it, so, I mean, that again is, I think, a good move because the Money in the Bank ladder match does mean a lot, right? Because you're earning the opportunity to cash in anytime, anywhere for any championship. And despite this year's just debacle of how much I despise the Money in the Bank ladder matches, this move here, or this event here, with having WrestleMania host the Money in the Bank ladder match, so pretty cool little stat there. I forgot about that. John Bradshaw Layfield, JBL, with Jillian Hall defeated Chris Benoit for the WWE United States Championship in just under 10 minutes. And those that don't remember Jillian Hall, now, all I remember about Jillian Hall, she was some kind of like sexy statistician, and she had this growth on her face that the boogeyman eventually ate. I mean, that's what I remember about Jillian Hall. That's really what I remember. It was bizarre. Edge, here we go, versus Mick Foley in a hardcore match. That was the fifth match of the night, and that ended up being the third longest match on the show at 14 and a half minutes. So we'll get to that in just a minute. But the rest of the card shaped out like this. The Boogeyman defeated Booker T and Sharmell in a handicap match. Yeah, that's right. Boogeyman versus Booker T and Sharmell. So this is before. You got to remember, put yourself back in TV-14 era. This is about a year and a half before WWE went PG on us. Maybe about a full 2 years. So they went PG in 2008. This is 2006. So they still had a couple of years of their blood and guts type of presentation, which I really miss at times. But I honestly don't think they'll ever go back. And understandably so, with their sponsors and the way the world is, good Lord. So the Boogeyman, again, was facing against Sharmell and Booker T. So Mickie James defeats Trish Stratus in a singles match for the Women's Championship in just under 9 minutes. The Undertaker defeated Mark Henry in a casket match that was 9 minutes long. And you know, people forget about that match, too. And it's one of Undertaker's, I think, most unique wins. And certainly probably Mark Henry's crux of his career, outside of the salmon-colored suit faux retirement speech that he pulled on John Cena and all of us several years back. I mean, that was damn brilliant. But this was, to me, I think, it was a nice move for Mark Henry. It was a nice showing for Mark Henry, and to make it feel like Mark Henry could truly be a threat to the Undertaker streak here, it was nice, and maybe I'll do another nostalgia on that sometime. Here we go. Here's some of the main events now. Shawn Michaels defeated Mr. McMahon in a no-holds-barred match for 18 minutes long. So Vince McMahon puts himself the second longest match of the show. And does that really surprise anybody, right? And does it surprise anybody? Not me. But to be fair, that was an excellent feud. Excellent. I've sung the praises of that program many times, of Shawn Michaels versus Vince McMahon, the way they built the heat. Something that I think WWE could learn from. They can learn from their own booking of the past. And I'm not saying every program has to build heat like Vince McMahon versus Shawn Michaels. That's not what I'm saying. But it'd be nice once in a while to have a heel in WWE be built in a way that makes you so angry that they're never getting what they deserve, a total ass-whipping. And that's what happened here with Shawn Michaels and Vince McMahon. I know this is not a Vince versus Shawn nostalgia, but it is wrestling nostalgia as a whole, and we're going to dive into Edge and McFoley in just a minute, I promise. But with Vince McMahon and Shawn Michaels, if you remember, I've said this before on some of my shows, but it's worth repeating because there's so much you can learn from this program. This was built around Shawn telling Vince he needs to basically move on from Bret Hart. That's really what it started in. I think it was started in December or January, whenever Bret Hart made his debut back to WWE and made amends, and Vince couldn't move on, and he ended up giving Bret a low blow, and Shawn told Vince basically you need to move on. And Vince, that was a seed for vengeance and a seed for anger that just grew and grew from Vince. And eventually, Shane and the Spirit Squad would get involved against Shawn Michaels and Vince himself, and Shawn just could not get to Vince. Shawn Michaels just could not get his hands on Vince. I mean, this went on for weeks and weeks, a couple of months, where Shawn just could not get Vince, the guy you wanted to see him get his teeth kicked down his throat. And it was a brilliant thing to watch, because it may, by the time you got to Mania, you are so amped to see Shawn Michaels destroy Vince, to see him tear him limb from limb, and that's what you got. And it was a thing of beauty. And so I think a heat-building lesson can be learned from that program. Again, not every match or every program has to be formulated in this exact way and structured this exact way. It's just the concept of building heat is so lost today. And it's just so tempting, or it's just unfortunately in the culture or the thinking of creative or Vince to be concerned about angering fans instead of realizing that angering fans with a heel that they dislike, never seeing them get their ass kicked, is making them more angry and wanting to see them get their ass kicked. See that little logic there? I think it's really lost today. But I like being angry. It doesn't always have to be a smile on my face. That's the worst thing WWE ever did, was adopt that marketing slogan that put smiles on people's faces. We heard it stomach-churningly from Stephanie McMahon two nights in a row at WrestleMania this year. It is the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. For a wrestling company to say that, and they're a wrestling company. I don't want to hear that they're sports entertainment. They are a damn wrestling company, and they will deny that, but they are. For them to tell us that tells me that they're not interested in building that. They're interested in making silly moments and silly comedy segments. And they're interested in making sure that the babyface doesn't get put down for too long and they always triumph. Like, give me a freaking break, right? Does the good guy always have to win? No, because it makes you want to see an even bigger good guy or good gal come up and put that heel down. Good heels, I think, are even more important than hot baby faces, because that's how hot baby faces are built, by standing up to those bad men and women, by standing up to those characters that are despicable and dislikable and easily angering, right? That's the key. Bad people, because you want to see good people stand up to those bad people. Okay, I think I've made my point. Rey Mysterio defeated Randy Orton and Kurt Angle in a triple threat for the World Heavyweight Championship. And that was 9 minutes long. And good God, could you imagine this in today's environment? Tori Wilson defeated Candice Michelle in, get ready for it, a Playboy pillow fight match that lasted just about 4 minutes. Imagine that today. That was 15 years ago. 15. It's absolutely... Actually, 14 years ago, if you're saying 2006, so I'm getting my math wrong. 14 years ago. I mean, I was 21. I don't know how old you are or were at that time, but it's really not that long ago that we were looking at the women and WWE is presenting the women as sex objects. It was not an eternity ago. It feels like it. It feels like it. But WWE, not that long ago, was treating their women as just objects. I mean, that's really what they were. I mean, outside of Trish and Lita, who even they at times were portrayed as sex objects, they were the only true credible women on the roster at that time. A handful. They were part of a small handful that were outside of, I mean, like, again, Candice Michelle's Playboy pillow fight. And then get this. That was really just the palate cleanser. That's how I'm reading how they booked this thing. To John Cena defeating Triple H by submission in a singles match for the WWE Championship that went 22 minutes and were obviously the main event of WrestleMania. And interestingly, with that match, a couple of things. Number one, this is when John Cena's finisher was the STFU. This obviously the FU got changed into the attitude adjustment because it's, you know, you can't say FU. And then the STFU is just the STF, right? They took the U out. So, again, different time, different TV rating, different demographic they were after. And so I remember the match being very good. But if you remember that match, you remember the crowd reaction more than anything. If you listen to that crowd reaction with Triple H versus John Cena here, you will be just in awe. Because this was, especially if you were watching this in real time, this was the first time John Cena had truly gotten a negative reaction on this magnitude, of this magnitude and this scale. This was the first time John Cena had been truly outright rejected by the wrestling faithful. And as WWE would love to label us and really just kind of define us all down of WrestleMania fans being non-traditional and just here to have fun. Like, that's how they always try to label and get ahead of the reactions that they know are coming to try to own them or explain them away to the audience. And instead of taking them seriously and acting like the reactions at WrestleMania and the Monday Night Raw after have some type of merit and they hold weight from the most ardent of fans that you have, from your most loyal fan base that you have. How do I know that? Because you're paying the highest ticket prices. You're also paying probably for a hotel. You're paying for a restaurant. And yet you are consistently, every year, outside of this year, obviously with no crowd, are always defining down or downplaying the crowd reactions that you get at Mania and the night after. And now the SmackDown after. It's angering because this is the fan base that is the most loyal, that has been there since day one. In most cases, or at least for a significant amount of time, and you are really insulting them on air by trying to explain away to the rest of the audience at home that these are just special fans, that they're non-traditional. Well, what's a traditional fan? Explain that, please. Explain what a traditional and non-traditional fan is. Because if I have been a wrestling fan for 20 plus years, am I considered non-traditional if I go there and boo John Cena or boo Roman Reigns? What does that even mean? So what is a traditional fan? Somebody that is just basically a corporate assembly line fan that is manufactured in some warehouse in Connecticut that just goes along with everything that you put out there and doesn't really have to think too much and just goes, yes, sir. No, sir. I'll cheer for them. I'll boo them. That's basically what they're defining a traditional and non-traditional fan as. So anyway, I know I'm on a complete sidetracked rant, but I haven't thought about that in a while because I haven't had a crowd reaction to listen to in a while. But again, if you listen to this match, the match itself was very good. This was John Cena's biggest match to date in his career, and having him go over on Triple H was a huge, huge deal at that time. Huge deal because it put over John Cena. It cemented him as the next guy. And, you know, this isn't John Cena's first title win, but at the same time, it was the biggest title win of his career. So, to that time anyway. Obviously, many, 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 many more championship runs and moments that he had throughout his career. But to that point, this was probably the biggest. So there's your card. There's your card. And stuck in the middle of that is Edge with Lita, facing off against Mick Foley in a hardcore championship match. Or hardcore match. No championship on the line. I'm sorry. However, so here's the setup. Edge or I'm sorry, John Cena at New Year's Revolution in 2006 ends up surviving the Elimination Chamber and retaining the WWE Championship. And Edge comes out, cashes in his Money in the Bank briefcase that he held on for months, cashes it in, and ends up pinning John Cena and to win the WWE Championship for his first time. It was a hell of a moment. And I remember being there. I was in front row right behind Jim Ross and booing the hell out of John Cena. I guess I was pretty non-traditional that night, along with, you know, 80% of the other fans in the Pepsi Arena, I think it was back then, in Albany. And having them destroy John Cena and cheer. Like, Edge got a monster pop when he came out. And an even bigger pop when he won. You don't believe me? Go watch New Year's Revolution, 2006. And it's interesting, too, as the Money in the Bank concept was relatively new when Edge first won it, Vince came out and announced that Edge was cashing in. Edge didn't just pop out with a referee like they do now. Vince came out and announced it. So, it again, just the way that it's presented today, obviously, is much, much different. But, so, Edge ends up beating John Cena. 3 months later, Mick Foley's a special guest referee in a championship match between John Cena and Edge. And John Cena ends up pinning Edge cleanly. Mick Foley counts a very reasonable 3 count, no fast count. And Edge lost his mind. Edge could not handle the fact that he lost the championship and placed the blame squarely on Mick Foley for his loss of the belt. And then the anger grew from there. The attacks grew from there. And Edge called Mick Foley just a huggable teddy bear, and he's just playing Santa Claus as he does on a yearly basis, and really saying that he's a soft guy now. And Mick Foley said, "You know what? You're right, Edge. You are, but you've awoken something in me. You've awoken the hardcore legend." Sounds similar, doesn't it? As I'm thinking about it, Edge is kind of coming full circle on that same story right now. That's a revelation. I just thought about that now. Edge is going through the same transformation that Mick Foley went through 14 years ago, except he was on the other end of it. Interesting. Something to think about. And maybe Edge pulled that same psychology from that match. Who knows? Who knows? Maybe not. But so the hardcore legend was awoke. Edge challenges Mick Foley to a match at WrestleMania. Mick Foley accepts, except he says it's going to be a hardcore match. That scares Edge, but it ends up lighting a fire underneath Edge and underneath Mick Foley. So the match gets started here, and we're going to get to some audio. The reaction, it's interesting. When you hear Edge's entrance, it's not a lot of cheers, which I guess I need to retrain my brain to go back 14 years and place Edge as a monster heel here, which he is damn good as a heel. And I'll be very surprised if during this run that they don't end up during Edge's run here. I know he's injured, but when he returns in probably three, four, 5 months, they'll place him as a heel at some point in this run, however long this lasts. I would say several years for a couple matches a year, definitely doable. And I hope at some point we get to see the true heel Edge. That'd be a cool thing to see because he is damn good at it. He's damn good at honestly either when you look at Edge. I don't think he's tailor-made for one or the other. He's just so damn talented he could play both. And I can't say that about every character for sure. I mean, good grief, look at Seth Rollins. Look at Charlotte. Both are born to be heels. It's uncomfortable to watch them as babyfaces because you know it's just forced and it's struggling and it's just it's awkward to watch. So, all right, let's get listening here to the entrances and then we'll get rolling.
Sex plot leader Edge is 4-0 at WrestleMania. Boy, is Edge ever amped up. With that baseball bat in hand, he's ready to go. Of course, last year at WrestleMania 21, he won Money in the Bank.
Alright, so that was Edge's entrance, and man, not honestly, I heard some boos. The music was so loud it was hard to really gauge it, but you're used to right now that monster pop when he came out, especially upon his return. And my God, when you hear Joey Styles, like, this is just, it's so contrasting, and I'm surprised it's still on the WWE Network. I mean, I of course this is TV-14 land, but it's just so contrary to all of the ideals and presentation that WWE has today. With Joey Styles calling Lita, I think he called her a sex robot. Like, Edge's sex robot? Is that what he just said? Lita, one of the best performers in the women's division at that time, was delegated to a sex robot of sorts for Edge. And this is, again, before or after they did their live sex celebration, one of the highest rated segments in Raw, by the way. But this is, it's just so telling of how they treated the women back then, which was, it was commonplace. It was just commonplace, and as a male viewer, you just assumed that that's how they were going to present the women. And now, I couldn't imagine that today. Could you? I mean, imagine, like, it's just so, I mean, that's a whole conversation for another podcast. I mean, just, how far WWE has come, or how sad it is for them to take this long to present the women in a respectful way, right? Like, you could make an argument that, oh, it's so great WWE's doing this, and look how far the women have come. But at the same token, well, why did it take them this long, number one? Why did it take a fan movement, an organic fan movement on Twitter, a hashtag give divas a chance? Why did it take that for WWE to actually do something and make a change? Shouldn't they have just kind of been like, kind of as like human beings? Like, hey, guys, we're like really, we're missing the boat here. Why do the women all just have to be sexualized? You know, so I'm glad, obviously, that WWE has moved on from that, and it's just interesting. So, okay, let's move on. Mick Foley's entrance. Here we go. Well, that's, again, Joey Styles. It's really nice to hear Joey Styles on commentary, isn't it? I mean, Joey Styles is, in WWE world, I think, super underappreciated. I know that he didn't have a long run as an announcer on Raw or on any brand. He was a fill-in for when Jim Ross was out, being fired for the umpteenth time or having a bout of Bell's palsy, of which he's had several. And you know, it's interesting, as many, including myself, totally guilty in the moment back then, I was only wanting to hear Jim Ross. I didn't want to hear the coach. I didn't want to hear Matt Stryker. I didn't want to hear Joey Styles. It was, to me, Jim Ross or nothing. And that's how I felt. And so, but now hearing Joey Styles, I would love that. I mean, I crave Joey Styles now. Obviously, I think Jim Ross is still the best of all time. In AEW, obviously, he's still very good. Lost a couple of steps, but hell. I mean, how old is the guy? Jeez. So, but it's really awesome that he's still getting to do what he loves to do, and that's be in the game, as he would say. Have a jersey. And right now, Joey Styles sounds like a voice I would love to hear every Monday night. I mean, it's just interesting how back then I would say, oh my God, no, I just want Jim Ross. And now I'm like, I would love Joey Styles. So, and by the way, one last thing. On Joey Styles, if you haven't seen Joey Styles shoot promo on Raw, just type that into YouTube. Joey Styles shoot promo on Raw. It is one of the most brilliant things I've ever heard in terms of how he views the product. It was not scripted, at least to my knowledge, or if it was, it was expanded upon when he got live on air, and how WWE he was told to just tell stories, and it's insulting to the men and women who apply their craft, being away from their families 300 days a year, and that WWE is all about toilet humor and boogers and all this stuff, and it's brilliant. It applies even 14 years later. It is just effing awesome. Please, I'm begging you as a fan, go watch the, again, type in YouTube, Joey Styles Shoot Raw promo, and it will pop right up. It is freaking awesome because it is still applicable today, and it's awesome. So, okay, anyway, let's get to the match. And this match started out pretty hot and heavy. Mick Foley gets the advantage right away, as most babyfaces do. You got to get the crowd into it. You got to get them excited. You got to get, okay, here we go. Yeah, the babyface is giving it to the heel. You know, you're that's how you engage fans. That's 99% of the time you're going to have in a one-on-one match, the babyface is getting advantage, at least for the first minute or two. And then things turn around, and they turned around in a big way. This match, again, was brutal from the perspective of the physicality of it, the weapons used, and good Lord, the thumbtacks. The thumbtacks were, they made an appearance here, and it was hard to watch. How do you fake it? The answer is you don't. You do not fake thumbtacks. These were real damn thumbtacks. So we're going to get to that spot, of course, in the moments leading on here. So let's listen to a little bit of audio here from the beginning, middle-ish part of the match.
Watch out. Ruthless Ant is here with us. Ruthless, heartless, devoid of any conscience here tonight. Hell-bent on the utter destruction of Mick Foley. Yeah. Oh, my God. They do it right there. May not be the WrestleMania moment that Mick Foley wanted. How can I possibly beat Mick Foley? He's hit him with everything. Almost everything.
All right, and so Mick Foley, the spot you just heard was Mick Foley getting his head bulldogged into a barbed wire bat. And chair shots to the head had previously occurred here. I mean, brutal chair shots to the head. I miss those once in a while. I know what you're going to say. Oh, you don't care about the welfare of the person. Of course I do. But SOB, I'm not calling you guys SOBs, but I'm saying SOB in light of actually saying the words because it's PG. You can't tell me that the chair shots to the head you don't miss in some sick part of your mind. Especially to somebody that deserves it as a heel, right? That somebody you just despise. I don't want to hear that you completely don't miss them and that you totally overshadowed your need to see it or need to want it because of, you know, your realization of concussions and the care that you have for the persons as people. Face it. I mean, I'm saying things that that I know people are thinking. I miss chair shots to the head once in a while too. I do. I just straight up do. Of course. I'm all for the support of concussions and awareness of concussions, and the long-term effects are devastating. But if you can fix a chair or get a chair that's not really steel and is much easier on skull, I'm all for it. I'm not advocating for chair shots to the head to be brought back where it could truly put the competitors at risk. Of course not. But if it's a worked chair that is safe somehow, and not made of true steel. I mean, and that is what I'm for. I really am. But okay, here we go with the spot. One of the two big spots of the match. Here we go. This is tough to watch. I wish you guys could see this with me.
Pin cushion king is pierced. The very edge of his back is pierced. And look at Corbin, it's effective. Okay, now it's hardcore. Uh-oh. No way, you can't do that. The hell he can't.
He is.
All right, so that was the spot there. A couple of things happened here. So Edge put down the tacks. He came out with the bag of tacks that were underneath the steel steps. Drops them in the ring. Unloads the bag. Ends up trying to put Mick in them, and lo and behold, Mick does a belly to back suplex, and Edge gets a big load of tacks in his back. And it's just kind of a rule, right? If you're a competitor in a hardcore match, which now they call just a no rules, no holds barred, no disqualification. You don't call it hardcore anymore. You ever notice that? It's not a hardcore match. The word hardcore has gone from WWE PG language, but they call it a no holds barred, whatever it may be. That whoever sets up the table, sets up the chair, sets up the jungle gym of devastation, you're going to go through it. I mean, it's just pro wrestling logic. So that's exactly what happened to Edge here. And boy, oh boy, thousands of thumbtacks. It probably was, I don't know if it was thousands, but hundreds of thumbtacks. Thousands is probably an overstatement. But hundreds of thumbtacks on the ring, in Edge's back. And boy, don't you get a little concerned? Like, your spine, it doesn't have a whole lot of cushion down the center of your back, right? Like, when you touch your spine, there's not a whole lot of cushion between your skin and your bone, and then obviously your spinal cord that is underneath that. So, no matter how those thumbtacks that you look at, I think are a little bit shorter than the typical needle of a thumbtack, but still, regardless. If a thumbtack goes into this, your vertebrae, I mean, there's so much risk. I feel like there's a ton of risk with that. And on top of it, you're creating thousands of, hundreds of holes in your back that could potentially become infected. I mean, like, and what's on the mat? It's grimy. Like, that's real blood on Edge's back. Like, you should see it. That is something that is, wow. And on top of the pain, I mean, I don't even want to get into that. That's brutal, brutal stuff. From that spot there. And then having Mick Foley do Mr. Socko with a barbed wire wrapped around his hand to Edge. And then Lita comes in and Mick Foley gives Lita the barbed wire Mr. Socko was awesome. You know, you forget about those times that WWE allowed man-on-woman violence and when it was warranted and when people were okay with it. And, interestingly, Lita also got a little bit of blood in her mouth from Mick Foley. So, that must have been, I'm sure, a little bit gag-inducing. And obviously, that part of it was not intended. But when you look back, if you watch this match, it's very evident that she gets blood in her mouth from Mick Foley's head. All right, so that's the big spot. One of the big spots. But this match is known for something else. This match is known for a little bit of something else, and beyond the violence, beyond the barbed wire grinding your head like a cheese grater, there is something else that this match is remembered for, and let's just play it.
These guys will ever be the same. Look at Foley. Look at Edge. Foley.
whether you like it or not, Edge remains unbeaten here at WrestleMania, but at what price?
I don't know if this is exactly a Kodak moment or not, but I don't think the blood is in Edge's eyes. Look at the thumbtack still in his back.
And so the spot you just saw was exactly what you remember from this match. Edge putting lighter fluid on a table that was set up outside the ring, having Lita use a lighter to ignite the flame. Table set ablaze perfectly. Edge then spears Mick Foley, who's standing on the ring apron, through the burning table to the ground, and perfectly done spot. It looked as safe as it possibly could be with fire and taking a bump through a table with the outside of a ring. I mean, it was as safe can get, I guess. It was a brilliant spot, perfectly executed, and it ended up getting Edge the victory. And one thing I forgot too, as you know, beyond the spot itself, which was the most memorable spot of the entire pay-per-view, and certainly of the match, was the expressions on the faces of Mick Foley, and more importantly, Edge, who has always been masterful in his facial expressions. Always. I mean, even to this day, even more now. But back then, he even had the gift of being able to emote and being able to tell you how he feels without saying a word, and being able to feel his emotions without having him say a word. It's a brilliant gift, especially as a pro wrestler. There's nothing bigger of a gift that you could have. The reason I bring that up is if you look at Edge's face, and I really encourage you guys to go watch this, Edge's face and his reaction to the match seems genuine. I think part of it probably was. He seemed like a traumatized child who had just gone through puberty at an extensive rate. He feels like somebody that, I mean, really, it's like he went into manhood. He went from boyhood to manhood in a matter of a few moments. And he was shaking. He's got blood trailing down his face. Mick Foley is a crimson mask. I mean, he's just absolutely in an enormous amount of pain on the outside of the ring. Edge is, again, shaking. He looks traumatized. Doesn't look forced or fake. It looks like he is truly, it's like he's come of age, right? It's very telling. The blood dripping into his eye. His eye is completely red from the blood dripping into it. Just a total mess. Edge was made that night. He was a made man that night, and no bigger stage, no better place to do it. And, you know, I look back now and I'm like very concerned for Mick Foley's health. I mean, that was 14 years ago, but it was just concerning to see Mick Foley come out of retirement to do that. And, you know, back then, obviously I wasn't thinking about that. And Mick Foley performed at a level that you'd generally expect from Mick Foley. I think he did a nice job of getting himself prepared for the match. Edge certainly did his part of it. The psychology was there. The story was there. This was a brutal match, but it was career-defining for Edge. It was an example of the times that we lived in as wrestling fans. It was a sign of the times, if you will, of the TV-14 era with this match being blood and guts and brutal, and also sexifying the women. I mean, blood, guts, and sex. Does it get any more just carnal than that as a human being? And that's exactly what WWE is promoting in this pay-per-view. And you know what? I think the pay-per-view as a whole, from what I remember, of course, I didn't watch the rest of the pay-per-view. It was, you know, an additional 3 hours, but it was when you look at the card, it was a really good card. Really good card, great stories generally, and you had the timeouts or the intermissions, if you will, with the women. And unfortunately, they were glorified intermissions unless you were really into the pillow fights and the outcome of that. I mean, how do you even call that? How do you even call that if you're a pro wrestling announcer? I'm very curious to maybe go back and watch the pillow fight between Candice Michelle and Tori Wilson in a Playboy pillow fight to see how JR calls that. Knowing today how much he despised that kind of stuff. How much, you know, it's to see kind of if I can read through his commentary of like, this is the dumbest crap I've ever seen. How do you do a play-by-play on that? I mean, it probably was all just Jerry the King Lawler sitting there getting, you know, getting excited and saying puppies 1,000 times. I mean, that's my guess. So, all right. Well, I hope you guys enjoyed this wrestling nostalgia. It feels like this has been a short one, but I mean, I'm coming up a little past 45 minutes, but, again, I love these shows. And if you guys have a suggestion for my wrestling nostalgia, my next show, go to realwwpodcast@gmail.com. Email me there or, send me a DM on Instagram at WWE_podcast or at my Facebook page. If you want to go to Facebook, you can like us there and comment and send me a DM at facebook.com/theWWEpodcast. So a few ways to get in touch with me is my Twitter, again, as you may or may not know, is defunct probably for a very long time. Still no explanation, but that's my thought. So I hope you guys enjoy this. Again, tomorrow will be your NXT review. AEW will be hopefully tomorrow. I'll be temporarily transitioning to a new host. And then on, what's the heck, Saturday will be your HSP SmackDown review. I know you guys love that show. And then on Sunday will be your week in review with a co-host of Michael Gross, who will be joining me on Sunday for your week in review. So really good schedule coming up. And I hope you guys enjoy it. If you like this, please give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and review us if you really like us. I really appreciate it. You can also head on over to the website at WWEpodcast.com. Okay, I think I've said it all, done it all. This has been a blast. Hope you guys enjoy your night, your morning. And as always, I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEpodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWEpodcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.